Midlands today on Midlands 103 with Tullamore Motors. The all-new Renault Megane. Feel the drive. TullamoreMotors.ie. When people in the Midlands want to talk, they talk to Will Faulkner.
Well, good morning. It is actually a lovely sunny start to what will hopefully be a happy Friday. And thanks to Lindsay for keeping the seat warm yesterday, and thanks to the people of Moat for their wonderful hospitality. A very different location this morning. A location that many believed was an impossible dream. But persistence pays off. You will find us in the window of the new Tullamore Arts Centre. Coming up today, how this became a reality and what is the vision for the future. Also, Justice Minister Helen McEntee reacts to recent high-profile crimes in the Midlands and also discusses her new pub licensing laws. What is the point of nightclubs staying open until 6 in the morning in this part of the country? And should restaurants charge you for late cancellations? I'll share a story with you in a few minutes and you can tell me, are you on the side of the customer or the restaurateur? When you call 0818 300 103 is my number. You can text, you can WhatsApp 083 3010 103, powered by Lamb Brothers Toyota in Tullamore. We'll start with the front page of the Irish Independent this morning because it reflects what you may be feeling, certainly what a lot of people are feeling. A job no longer protects against poverty is the stark headline over a report by the ESRI, the Economic and Social Research Institute, those scientists who study society and make recommendations to government. And they have found that if you are in private rented accommodation, you are at a far higher risk of poverty than if you own your own home. There are now 625,000 people below the poverty line. Poverty, well, you can define it in many ways. They have a technical definition, but suffice to say, a lot of people are feeling worse off. We'll get into the reasons for that a little later because the European Central Bank has just increased the rate, the base rate, by 0.75%, which is the third in a fairly rapid series of rises. And it won't be the last. Another increase is on the cards in December. And experts believe there will be more in 2023. And the point of this is it makes borrowing more expensive, and in theory, that dampens inflation. It takes some money out of the system, takes the heat out of the economy. The dilemma, of course, is inflation is largely fueled by energy prices on this occasion. So will the old formula work, or does it just cause financial hardship? We shall have that debate a little later. Now, the Irish Times introduces you to Paul and Helen MacDonald, who own Bastion, which is a Michelin-starred restaurant in Kinsale in County Cork. And they woke up one morning to a one-star TripAdvisor review, which nobody in business ever wants to see. And it had been left by a family who say they had called an hour before their reservation was due, having to cancel because their daughter was in an emergency department and they were awaiting test results to ascertain the severity of an injury. However, their credit card was immediately charged €250, which was the full price menu for two people. And the argument from the owners of the restaurant, the McDonald's, is that they had already purchased the food and prepped the food for 12 diners. It was too late to fill the table. Yes, they have a cancellation list, but at an hour's notice, not a hope. Not a hope would somebody take it up. So they're standing over their decision to take the €250. Are they right? It's a difficult one because the circumstances are obviously very, very distressing. From a restaurant owner's point of view, if everybody calls and says, well, my loved one is sick, how do they prove it or disprove it? They're still out of pocket. A strange story highlighted by the Irish Examiner this morning. A Chinese police station has been ordered to close in Dublin. Yes, a Chinese police station in Dublin. Now, this was highlighted by a human rights body called Safeguard Defenders. And they had suggested that there are many police outposts, security outposts, being set up in secret around the world by the Chinese to try and force dissidents back home. And the Department of Foreign Affairs has confirmed that neither the Chinese authority nor the province where the police were based, neither had made a request in advance to the Department of Foreign Affairs to establish this office. And so the embassy in Dublin, the Chinese embassy, was informed that it must close and cease operations, which it now has. Strange that this could happen right under our noses in Dublin. Elon Musk is waking up today as the new owner of Twitter, or the chief twit, as he calls himself on his Twitter bio. He has purchased the company for $44 billion. And he says he's doing so in the interests of humanity. The world's richest man making an investment for the interests of humanity no doubt raises a sceptical eyebrow. His argument is it has to be the town square of the world where free speech is enshrined. And he says he is an absolutist when it comes to free speech. He's even going to bring Donald Trump back on to Twitter. He's also culling staff numbers. One report suggests 3/4 of Twitter staff will be laid off to pay down company debt. He's denying it'll be to that extent. But the CEO and the chief financial officer and a number of other high-profile execs were escorted out yesterday by security the moment the deal went through. Should free speech be absolute? Should Donald Trump have a platform and others who might be even more extreme? Elon says yes. What do you say? Now, if you're looking for a good movie over the weekend, the Irish Independent reviews The Good Nurse, which is out on Netflix and runs to 2 hours. And you often see that phrase, based on a true story, leading into many movies. This one is based in a hospital. A single mum is a nurse, and she's giving 100% of her time and her focus to her job, and is struggling to find that extra energy that motherhood demands. And she has a health issue. I won't give a spoiler on this. Suffice to say, she meets a colleague who is very supportive, but this colleague has a darker side, and that is fleshed out through the movie. Fleshed out, actually, being the operative word. So it's worth 2 hours of your time. It gets 4 stars out of 5 and is said to be a slow burner, if you like that kind of a movie. That's in the Irish Independent, if you want to read the whole review. What would you do in this situation? A letter to one of the papers says, "My husband had an affair a couple of years ago. I was devastated when I found out, and despite marriage counselling and lots of attempts to get things back on track, we eventually separated this year. Our 3 children are in their teens, the youngest being 13, the eldest is 17, and we agreed we wouldn't tell them about his affair. Instead, we told them we simply had grown apart. The big issue now is that since he moved out, I've somehow been framed as the bad guy by my children, who have it in their heads I initiated the separation. It is deeply unfair and upsetting, and now I'm considering telling them the real reason. So what should I do?" Yeah, you tell them. Why would you protect his secret? Am I wrong? Although it could backfire. If they already believe you're the bad guy, they may not believe you. Thankfully, not all relationships end in that way. And our final story brings us to rsvp.ie. Very swanky. Simon Casey, good morning. And Denise Casey in Ballycumber. He is featured, as Simon you will know, of course, from his musical exploits and his initial fame, which is going back 20 years. You're a Star. Can you believe it's 20 years ago? He's barely aged a day as well, which is really sickening. And these days you'll find him in the Eagles tribute band Take It to the Limit, along with all the weddings that he goes to. But in the interview, he talks about meeting Denise. And he says, "I suppose you could call us childhood sweethearts. We were in the same class together in primary school. we made our communion and our confirmation together, and we also got married together. Wow, that's a lovely, lovely story. Are there others like that? Can you go back almost to when you were in the pram and they got married and they lasted together? It's beautiful. And compared to the previous story, it's a nice sunny Friday morning feeling. 083 30 10 103, if you can match that sort of romance. One story on the front pages that I will be covering in more detail with you later. The ongoing investigation into the killing of Stéphane Poitier, who was known by his stage name Stéphane de Gaillien. Well, it's a gruesome story, actually. Many of the papers are reporting that it was a stabbing. The Gardaí officially describe it as a violent incident. Broken hearted for our psychic pal is the headline on the front of the Irish Daily Star, and a number of friends have described him as being one of the preeminent psychics and tarot card readers in the world, actually. His official Facebook profile described him as a spiritual shamanic advisor and a tarot master. Now, according to the Irish Daily Star, a man has been arrested, not in connection with this, but in connection with some previous incidents for which he was being investigated. And he was found cowering under the mattress of a bed in County Carlow. So we expect to hear more detail on this after about a quarter to ten this morning. Next, though, with that as a backdrop, and indeed with other stories we've heard recently, such as the increase in assaults on Gardaí over the last 10 years, and even from last year to this year, 241 incidents last year, and we're set to exceed that. There's a question of respect for the Gardaí. There's also a question of Garda numbers. As we heard in Athlone recently, there's no community policing unit, no dedicated drugs unit, no new Gardaí. The Minister for Justice will be here next. Midlands 103 from the Esker Arts Centre in Tullamore today, a venue that has taken over a decade to materialise and is finally approaching completion. And if you're in the heart of Tullamore, you'll be pleased to see a whole new lease on life given to this building, the former Kilroy's electrical store. Good morning, Derry. No TVs, no washing machines. Radios only today. Radios are always allowed. But enough about the past. Today is about the future, and you'll hear what the vision is from around 20 to 11 today. And one big fundraiser, which you will enjoy. You will get a kick out of this, I promise you. That's a little bit later. Now, if you fancy being in a nightclub until 6 in the morning, and to each their own, then it will be possible under an overhaul of the licensing laws, which are 200 years old, believe it or not. However, if you're not a fan of being at the nightclub until late, how much is in this for you? Helen McEntee is the Minister for Justice. Minister, good morning.
Good morning, Will. Hi, how are things?
Outside of Dublin, Cork, Galway, the major cities, what's the point of this?
Well, look, as you've just said yourself, I suppose we have at the moment a licensing system that really is out of date and not fit for purpose. It's, you know, our first licensing law dates back to 1833, and over the years it's just been added on to and kind of developed this patchwork of about 100 different laws. So we're consolidating it into one law, but also we're trying to do a number of different things. So for the people who currently own pubs, restaurants, hotels, what I'm doing is streamlining the licensing process firstly. So instead of having to go to the circuit court to renew or where there are any issues, which is obviously a costly exercise, it's being brought to the district court. So again, trying to make it easier, but also reduce costs for people who are currently in the business. Secondly, what we're doing is streamlining the other types of hours. So you mentioned nightclubs being open till 6 o'clock. I don't anticipate that every town and village, or you know, even some of the larger towns would have that. But what we are saying is if you own a pub, at the moment it's Monday to Thursday, there's a different hour, Friday to Saturday, different hours, Sunday, different hours. So So we are saying you can open from 10:30 to 12:30 any night of the week. And then separately, if you want to have a late bar, you can open until 2:30, which is currently the case. Now, for those who do run late bars, and we have plenty of late bars that are in our rural smaller towns and villages as well, at the moment you have to apply for what's called a special exemption order. So you have to essentially pretend as though you're having a special event and pay for the pleasure of that every single night. And you have to go to the course, again the circuit course, every month to renew it. What I'm going to be saying is you can apply for a yearly permit. You can go into the district court once, and you can pay for it at a much lower and reduced rate. So we're really just trying to make sure that everything is more streamlined, it's more straightforward, it's more modern, it's more fit for purpose. And for those who own these businesses, that we reduce the cost as much as possible. Now, to try and move things along as well and add a bit more variety, we will have amenity licences. So for people who don't want to necessarily go to the pub, who don't, you know, who aren't going out for dinner, what I'm saying now is that if you are a venue where you can put on a play or a show, if you have an art gallery, if you have a performance, a food event, you will be able to apply for a cultural amenity licence. And it just means that you can serve alcohol an hour before until an hour after the event. And it gives a little bit more variety, particularly in some of the rural towns and villages where there is nothing other than maybe the pub and the restaurant. So it's really, it's about providing variety for people, but also making it a lot easier for those who work in the industry at the moment.
Let's see it from a different perspective, though, Minister. If you live near one of these venues, or indeed if you're the local Gartha superintendent and you have a concern, how will you be able to raise it under the new system?
So under the new system, if you are applying for the first time to open a venue, you will go to the district court. But what I've said very clearly is that there are a number of people that you have to notify and who will be able to comment. So the local fire station or the fire chief to make sure that your premises is compliant. The Gardaí will have a say as well. So if this is somebody that they feel, has previously owned somewhere or has not held, has had a premises before and hasn't managed as well. But also you'll have the HSE, you'll have an ability for a representative from the local authority and also for local residents who have a bona fides interest in the area or where they might be impacted. All of these people can obviously have a say if there is a problem. So some of the ways in which a judge might take into consideration a refusal is if we have too many in the area. So if it's overpopulated with pubs or nightclubs, if somebody, as I've said, is not of good character and that's made clear to them, if it's in too residential an area, if it's in the middle of an estate, you know, all of these kind of things, you have to be very practical and make sure that it doesn't impact on a community, that it doesn't have a negative impact overall. So, you know, we want to make sure that this is, that we don't open things up too much at the same time that we do try and provide an easier path for people who are trying to run a business and to try and run a good business as well.
Just to clarify, you said on the first application, now the dynamics of an area can change over time. So would those interested parties have another opportunity to comment if, for instance, let's say a new estate was built next to a pub and there would be a noise consideration late at night that hadn't existed previously?
Absolutely. So, I mean, if somebody is renewing a licence and there have been problems, now the scenario that you've mentioned here, obviously, if the venue is there before the estate, then that might take a different form, you know, that might mean something different to somebody applying to have a venue in an estate and there being problems throughout the year. But if a person is going to renew their licence and there are no objections, they can do it online quite simply and it can be very simple and straightforward. If there are objections, you know, if they haven't done things properly, if there have been issues at night, if there's been antisocial behaviour, if they've gone over the hours, any of these type of things, then there is an opportunity for people to make an objection and to raise those concerns. Now, what's important here is obviously it must be people within the locality. It must be people that are impacted by the actual premises. So you couldn't have a situation where someone from Wexford suddenly decided to object to something in Offaly. They don't have a relevant, valid interest in the area and it shouldn't be impacting them. So, you know, we have to be fair to the businesses, but also very fair to the community. And I think underlying all of this as well you know, we're talking about, not to a great extent, but to a certain extent, extending hours. So you have to have public health in mind as well. So that's where the HSE comes into this. You know, if a local hospital sees that there's issues happening, or if there's problems, again, they would have an opportunity to have their say, because I'm very conscious that this is not a, you know, this is not the same kind of commodity as selling bread or selling cheese or anything like that. We are talking about alcohol, so we have to make sure that there are still protections and there are still measures in place to help people.
A few callers from the Athlone area suspect that there may be interest in later hours for the nightclubs there, because it is a student town. And the question they've raised is over transport. Have you considered unintended consequences, like girls perhaps being out until 6 a.m, but no taxis available to bring them home?
So what we've actually done over the last year and a half is had a huge amount of engagement with all people who might be impacted or relevant stakeholders. So that would include the transport sector, the Gardaí, the health side of things, the industry themselves. So we've had constant engagement. And actually one of the biggest problems that has come back to us, be it in, you know, be it in Athlone, Dublin, Cork, or even the rural towns and villages, is that when people all come out of the bars at the same time, and at the moment 2:30 is the latest that you can be, everybody comes out onto the street at the same time. There aren't enough taxis. A lot of public transport is not running at that hour. And so that's where you end up with a huge amount of people on the street. That's where you end up with people not being able to get transport. You end up with incidents happening, you know, and you see fights and different things may occur where there's people left hanging around. So by actually spreading it out, by, in particular in the larger cities where you have more people, by letting people come out at different times, you're actually spreading the workload across for those who are operating taxis and different types of transport. So they've actually welcomed this change. But also, if you think about the larger cities again, at 6 o'clock in the morning, generally the public transport has started again. So there's actually a lot more available for people to get home at that hour. Now, it's not that we're saying we want people coming out of nightclubs and, you know, people going to work. A lot of this will more likely be at the weekends. It could be when people are off, you know, and public transport is still running at that stage. But I'm very conscious in general, and you mentioned, you know, young girls trying to get home, part of the zero tolerance strategy, which is quite a significant plan we launched in June on domestic and sexual violence. Part of that strategy is around greater infrastructure, greater transport at night, to protect people and help people get home, and in particular girls. So there's a number of actions there for AIM and Ryan around increasing our public transport, our different links, be it train, be it Lewis, be it bus, be it taxi providers. So that's something that's been worked on separately as well.
But directly under your brief would be the number of Gardaí. And again, if we take the Athlone area, Aengus O'Rourke, who is the Cathaoirleach of Westmeath County Council, he claimed recently that there's no community policing unit, no dedicated drugs unit, and no new Gardaí in Athlone. He raised the question why Mullingar had 50 more Gardaí than Athlone. These are the bread and butter issues, Minister. What do you intend to do about that?
Well, firstly, I agree with everybody in that I think we need more Gardaí, and that has been a priority for me for the last 2 years. We've obviously had significant challenges with COVID-19, so it's meant that we haven't been able to get the recruits and the numbers into Templemore, the Garda College, as quickly as we'd like. In saying that, every region, every division has seen an increase in the number of guards. We are moving to a different type of model, and obviously in charge of those different areas, the chief superintendents will decide where Gardaí are allocated when they do get the additional numbers coming out of the college. Over and across the board, there has actually been an increase in the number of Gardaí, but I want to see that increase more, and that's why I got money for 1,000 Gardaí for next year, 400 civilian Gardaí as well. So the more that we have coming out of Templemore, the more each area will see that lift and see that rise, and that includes, you know, the larger towns, but it also includes the rural areas as well, where the community policing side of things is really important to people, to know their local guards, to know that they're there for different events or that they can ring and pick up the phone. And that's part of the change that is happening at the moment. So we have a new operating model that's going to be rolled out across the country, and it means each area will have their own community policing team. And so we'll start to see more and more of these Gardaí out on the ground. And look, that's what people want to see. They want to see frontline Gardaí. But also it's important that we continue, as you say, to populate the more specialised teams. So whether it's online fraud, whether it's domestic violence, whether it's the drugs unit, the armed support unit, all of these teams, they all need to see that boost as well. And that will be part of the overall increase.
Minister, before we let you go, on an unrelated note, maybe you can bring clarity to an issue that was causing confusion this week. The Restoration Committee for Cullen Barracks were under the impression from national newspapers that plans were afoot to transform it into accommodation for Ukrainian refugees. The local minister, Peter Burke, said no such plans exist. What do you understand the situation to be?
Well, what I would say is that every option is being looked at the moment, and I think people will appreciate that we are under significant pressure in terms of our accommodation. We have housed almost 65,000 people since the start of this year, and what every department has always been asked to do over the last few months is to look at the buildings that are within our remit. So in my own department in Justice, we've looked at our own estate and what do we have that's vacant and what can be used to support people. And that's the same with the Department of Defence and other areas as well. So we are, you know, actively looking at all of the options, but I mean, not everything would be suitable. Some will require investment. And so it's an ongoing piece of work that's happening to try and see what is available or not. So I'm afraid I can't confirm or not that that is going to happen. But what I can say is that all options have been kept on the table and all options have been looked at. And it's purely because of the fact that we know these numbers are not going to get smaller. We know we'll probably see more people over the winter, particularly when we look at what Vladimir Putin is doing and how he is literally trying to force people from their homes by cutting them off, their electricity, their fuel, their heat, absolutely everything. It's devastating to watch. So we have to keep all of these options on the table. But if there is something to happen, of course, those who are involved in the barracks, those who need to know will obviously be engaged with, and there will be nothing happening without people knowing that it's going to happen, if it does.
Minister for Justice Helen McEntee, thank you for your time.
Thanks.
A survey in the Irish Times today would seem to back that up. It suggests 72% of people in Ireland say we must continue to stand by Ukraine, even if it means energy shortages. Only 1 in 5 disagree with that statement. However, at the same time, 6 out of 10 say they're concerned too many refugees are coming here. A suspect in the fatal stabbing of Stéphane Poitier in Westmeath was found by Gardaí hiding under a duvet, cowering in the bedroom of a woman related to him. The Irish Independent also reveals he had been in custody since he was arrested in relation to outstanding bench warrants, and he has not yet been questioned by detectives about the murder. Now, Mr. Poitier, a Belgian man, is described as a popular man who lived in the area for 20 years, wouldn't do any harm to anybody, and was this week found at his bungalow in Ratton between Milltown Pass and Kinnegad, suffering the effects of a violent attack. He was well known as a psychic, and Geraldine O'Brien of Holistic Fair Ireland worked with Stéphane in the past and says there was never a bad word about him.
Yeah, not good. When I heard off the news, I rang a couple of my psychic readers that do attend a lot of my shows at the moment, and they're all just totally, totally shocked, because Stéphane was an amazing man and a great psychic medium, and he's going to be sadly missed. Yeah.
Can you give me a sense of what Stéphane would have done as a psychic?
Yeah, he used to come and attend my fairs, mostly in around the Monaghan area. And people would come in, they would either pre-book him or just come in and see him. And he would come in and set up at the Holistic Fairs. And I would have called prior to him maybe coming, looking to book him. People just coming in, just looking for, I suppose, life, you know, what life was thrown at them at the time, and maybe it was emotional stuff or whatever. So he would sit down and he would read the cards or do a mediumship with them as well. And a lot of them would be very emotional afterwards. So Yeah, it was. That's what he did at the shows.
And since you worked with him, can you give me a sense of what Stefan was like as a person?
Oh, my God. Yeah, he was such a gentle soul, you know. Lovely, lovely gentleman. Nobody ever had a bad word about him. He would come in and keep to himself, come in, set up, go have his coffee, you know, come back, do his days of reading. And you would see him at the end of the day, you know, hugging other psychic readers. They wouldn't get to see each other, obviously, until the end of the day because we're all very, very busy. And, you know, he'd be, you know, chatting to them just before he'd leave and a hug and come up and give me a hug as well before he'd leave. And yeah, just a gentleman. Absolutely beautiful man.
I get the sense that Stefan was popular among the psychic community.
He was very, very popular. Like in the early days, I sent for a long, long time ago since I've seen him. But you would get the calls now and again looking for Stefan. Yeah, he was a very true to himself man, very true psychic medium. And yeah, that's it, yes. I would just want to send my thoughts and my prayers out to his family as well, from us all at Holistic Fairs Ireland and any of the psychic and mediums and healers out there as well in Ireland.
Geraldine O'Brien of Psychic Fairs Ireland. Hey, how are you on this sunny Friday morning? Well, I hope it's sunny where you are, because as I gaze out the window of the new Esker Arts Centre, good morning in Tullamore. And in the next, you'll hear about the journey so far and also the vision for Ireland's newest arts centre. Watch out, Electric Picnic, because Forest Fest is back in County Laois and will be even bigger. But will it still retain the charm of a smaller festival? Would the Friday panel eat seaweed? Yes, it's one of the strange and unusual stories of the last 7 days. And why Brian Clunan, Anthony Kearns and yours truly have been hitting the gym this week. All for a good cause, and unfortunately, I suspect it will be a futile exercise. Find out more later. By the way, our competition this week is with thanks to Max of Abbey Leaks. Well worth the drive, Max Restaurant and Bar. €250 to spend there, and it is open Thursday through Sunday, whether you're looking for a quick burger or maybe a big celebration dinner. Got a big birthday coming up, maybe a celebration of some kind? Well, you can call them or indeed look them up online through social media. But caller of the week will win €250 to spend there, which you will need in this time of inflation. The top story on the Irish Independent this morning, quoting the ESRI, a job is no longer a protection against poverty, and there are now 625,000 people below the poverty line. Now, however you define it, and there is a technical definition, there will certainly feel like there's less money in your pocket. And especially if you are a mortgage holder, the European Central Bank confirming a third increase yesterday, third in a series of very rapid increases, 0.75% in this case, and another likely in December, with more in 2023. And this in the name of quelling inflation. But if inflation is largely energy driven, will the old techniques work? Well, I want you to meet Billy Kelleher. He is a Fianna Fáil MEP. Billy, I know the ECB, the European Central Bank, is independent of politics, much like our own central bank here. Is there a feeling in Brussels this approach is working? Good morning.
Good morning, Will. Well, I mean, we're not quite sure. I mean, yes, the European Central Bank is independent. It will make its decisions based on its remit, which is to ensure price stability, which effectively is a technical term for keeping inflation at or around 2-3%. Inflation in Ireland is running at around 8-9%. Across the European Union, it's well over 10%. And in some countries, it's gone over 20% within the European Union. So there is huge pressure on to deal with the issue of inflation. But of course, as you start rising interest rates, well, then you have another difficulty as well, is where do you get the balance? You put pressure on consumers, lots of consumer confidence, as you say, less money in people's pockets, and then all of a sudden you could end up tipping economies into recession. So it really is a very, very challenging and difficult time for policymakers, for governments, but more importantly for citizens and for people who have mortgages and who are finding making ends meet at the moment exceptionally difficult. So I think that the European Central Bank, and I'm not the expert in this, but we do oversee monetary policy and in the European Parliament, but we certainly have to be conscious of the fact that we don't want to put the bigger economies into recession in the European Union, which could have a major impact across the entire Eurozone then.
So what is the prevailing wisdom in Brussels about how many increases there may be, presuming, of course, December not to be the last?
Yes, well, I mean, the European Central Bank has been flagging interest rate rises for some time. And I mean, most policymakers across Europe would have been, and governments when making decisions would have been basing it on the fact that interest rates were not going to stay at or close to zero. So, I mean, you'll probably see another interest rate rise when the European Central Bank meets in December. And then as you go into 2023, I assume they will look and hope that they will look at the impact that, you know, potential gas price drops are having. Gas is coming down quite quickly in Europe at the moment. We have a mild winter, or the stores across Europe are full of gas. We have secured contracts from other countries other than Russia. It depends on the war in Ukraine, how long that will drag out. A lot of these things have an impact. But, you know, so I would imagine there'll be another interest rate rise in December. And then in 2023, you know, they may start to look at slowing the interest rate rises based on where the economies are. But if we push the likes of Germany and Italy and others into recession, well, then very quickly that has a contagion effect across the entire Eurozone, which would have an impact on all economies then.
Under conventional circumstances, raising interest rates should dampen down exuberance. So let's say post-pandemic, when we had record levels of savings in Ireland and there was enormous consumption, people buying new TVs, things of that nature, then raising interest rates is an effective tool to deter that sort of behaviour. But in this situation, when you cannot avoid using energy, you cannot avoid buying food, what is the point of raising the interest rates other than hurting homeowners?
Well, I mean, the theory behind it is that you just take more money out of circulation. I mean, as you said, I mean, we have huge numbers of volumes of money in deposit. In Ireland, there is, you know, 120 billion plus on deposits and savings. You know, that is a huge sum of money. That is magnified across a lot of Europe as well, where savings have been the norm for some time because of the COVID pandemic. You know, people were saving rather than spending. So, like, if money starts coming out quickly into the system and, you know, you don't have any dampening effect, well, then very quickly that just inflates prices further. And that is the concern. So, I mean, the idea is to take money out of circulation. Of course, the question is, if you take money out of circulation, who do you hurt the most? And from the perspective of interest rate rises, well, clearly it is mortgage holders and their families and, you know, and small businesses then with loans as well. So very quickly that has could have a very negative impact on growth and on economies, on job sustainability and employment. So we just have to be very, very careful. And I think the European Central Bank, its mandate is to keep price stability at around 2 to 3%, in other words, inflation at or below that. But I would be concerned that if they move very, very quickly, you know, that it could tip some European economies into recession. And we just have to be very conscious of that. We, you know, where we are with massive public countries borrowed substantially for the COVID pandemic, we very quickly could find ourselves in huge difficulty, particularly when you look at the Italian economy, the size of its debt, where it is politically and all of these things. We just need to be conscious of that. So look, from my perspective, I think the European Central Bank, it flagged what it was going to do. But equally, you know, this was a 0.75% rise. We could have another rise in December and then into January, February of next year. But we really do have to hope that the European Central Bank doesn't just use its price stability obligations to drive interest rates up when it is having other impacts on the broader economy.
Let's bring it back to you then and other MEPs, because you're the policy makers and the bank decides its policies independently. What other tools are in the box to achieve this outcome of dampening down and maybe even reducing those energy prices and indeed those food prices that won't have the impact on homeowners, that won't push more people into poverty, as the ESRI has pointed out today. What are the other weapons in the arsenal?
Well, I mean, from a European perspective, I mean, obviously supporting governments that are under huge pressure. So we'd say, for example, a windfall tax or a solidarity tax on energy companies that are making substantial profits, for example, that could be dispersed to governments and governments into citizens that are under pressure. So as you mentioned in your report there from the ESRI, where you have significant sums of people falling into the poverty line or below the poverty line, to assist people like that who are in difficulty. The other area where Europe really has to be aggressive on as well is trying to find mechanisms to drive down the cost of energy and the cost of electricity. So that does mean, in my view, decoupling gas from electricity prices, ensuring that renewables are not excessively profiteering. In other words, you know, if they are now in demand because of where they're positioned in terms of electricity pricing, that they are not excessively profiteering from that, and that there's a cap put on renewables, because the sun hasn't got it more expensive, or neither has the wind, or nuclear, or hydro. So there are
but
key areas.
Why is that decoupling taking so long? Because you and I have talked about it before, and indeed I think Ursula von der Leyen, the Commission President, first flagged it in August. We're now nearly in November.
Yes, well, I mean, countries were having had different views. I mean, the European Union wasn't, in terms of member states, wasn't as one voice in this, because some countries were concerned, particularly when they were trying to purchase and increase their stocks of gas. They felt that a cap, you know, could diminish their capacity to enter into contracts for the purchase of gas. And, of course, that then had a knock-on effect in terms of gas being the price setter for electricity. I still think that they'll move towards that position whereby they will unravel or decouple gas as being the main benchmark for electricity in the time ahead. I just think that we have a diversity of supply now way and above and beyond gas. You know, we use nuclear, solar, wind and all the other renewables coming on stream as well, and other forms of LNG coming from outside of Europe as well, and from and not from Russia anymore. So I think they will diversify on that issue. But from a
But at this rate, it'll be too late. The winter will be over by the time there's agreement on decoupling.
Yes, that is quite possible. Will, I mean, like, you know, we will have to get a unanimity or at least a broad support of all the countries that this is the right way to go. But gas prices have eased quite dramatically since about August. And that is one area. That thing could have a knock-on effect in terms of fertilizer prices, which have a knock-on effect on food prices. So, I mean, if we can get gas prices down to a reason, to a level where they're reducing, well, then that might allow increased production of fertilizer, reduce cost to farmers who can grow more grain and crops, and that might just alleviate the concerns about the pressures on food security and food supply, not necessarily just in Europe itself, but across the globe. So there are some areas where European policy, you know, can have an impact on in the medium term in terms of inflation. But I mean, the challenge now is the here and now, today, tomorrow, and next month's bills.
Indeed. Well, it's a shame nobody told the energy companies that gas prices were falling since August, because they applied increases from the 1st of October, yet the latest set. Billy, appreciate your time and thank you.
Thank you very much, Will.
Billy Kelleher is a Fianna Fáil MEP. I would like your thoughts on this, because I'm looking at the front of today's newspapers, 0.75% being added to the base rate of the European Central Bank. That will filter eventually through to mortgage holders. Already it will if you're on a tracker. Variable rates, I'm sure there will be announcements in the coming days about different banks increasing to varying degrees. And the main story on the Irish Independent, how over 600,000 people are now below the poverty line, when you have to consider we've never had more tax collected in this country. The economy apparently is booming, but some are doing much better than others, clearly. It must be the location, the Esker Arts Centre in Tullamore. Adam and I have just discussed the meaning of life and the prospect of an afterlife. And gosh, that was very, very deep while you were listening to all of those lovely advertisements that pay the bills. Well, something to look forward to in 2023. Forest Fest returns to Emo from July 21st to 23rd. And its inaugural year was, of course, this year. totally new adventure for Philip Marr and his team, who had never been a concert promoter before. And now you're a pro, Philip. Good morning.
Good morning, Will. Greetings from Portlaoise. Hardly a pro, but anyway, we had a great time last year. We've learned a lot, so delighted to be going again. Looking forward to it.
Here's a conundrum. So normally we always present bigger and better next year, but you very deliberately set out to create a small, intimate festival, family-friendly and so on. And as you know from watching Electric Picnic grow over the years, the bigger you get, sometimes the more the headaches come along as well. So what's your vision for next year with that context in mind?
Yeah, very good point, Will. We were extremely conscious of that when we were creating the event, that we wanted something to hark back to the very beginning days of the Electric Picnic, that lovely family-friendly atmosphere where everybody was comfortable, things were convenient, best of music, best of arts, the food court facilities, all of that kind of thing. And we were absolutely thrilled that people bought into that concept and trusted us. This year, it was an absolutely resounding success and we were sold out. But people commented on the fact that they felt so safe, they felt so comfortable, they were able to park their car and within 2 or 3 minutes they were on site with a beer in their hand listening to the best of music. And that's what we're going to continue to do. Well, we made a commitment to all of our guests last year that we would recreate the same atmosphere. We're just sprinkling a little bit of gold dust onto it this year. We're adding an extra stage area, but people that were there last year will remember that there was on the footprint a very large area that wasn't being used, and we're just going to add on to the festival an area to celebrate the very, very best of Irish and Celtic trad and folk, and we're going to call that area the Festival Flat. So it'll be a little festival within a festival. So while we'll be having the best of rock, the best of pop, the best of comedy, the best of spoken word, we're also adding this new dimension of the Festival Fla this year. So I think that's going to even add more fun to the experience that people had last year. It was just such a great, great, great event last year. We just had to do it again.
And inherently Irish. And indeed, looking at the lineup this year, the green jersey was firmly on. The Irish were very well represented. Are you tempted to maybe look at international acts for next year?
Yes, Will. We haven't been sitting on our hands since August, and we've been reaching out to a lot of international acts. And because of the success of the event last year from a production point of view and facilities point of view, a lot of bands that may have looked at us last year and said, look, it sounds great in theory, but maybe come back to us next year when we see what you can do. They have all ticked the box and said they couldn't believe what they were seeing. And a lot of those are coming on board, thankfully. So we're going to have the best of Irish again. Obviously, we want to support our own, but we're also going to add a very, very strong flavour of the best of international acts. And while I can't reveal anything today to you, we're going to do our reveal, hopefully, at the Midlands Hospitality Awards on the 14th of November. I hope to see you there, Will. We're nominated for that. We're truly honoured to get on that bill with such other great festivals in the locality. But we're hoping to have our reveal that night. But you will be amazed by the acts that are coming, and you'll be smiling next July, I can guarantee you, because there's going to be anthems going back to the 80s, 90s, early noughties that we all grew up with, and they're going to be an emo. It's just going to be an amazing experience.
You've got a lot of ground to cover over the next 9 months, and you know, the world can change. We talked to Anna Marie McHugh of The Ploughing not so long ago, and she was remarking on ticket prices and how inflation had been a challenge in trying to find the sweet point for how much to charge. That's a real crystal ball challenge for you now, isn't it?
It is, really. And look, we're very conscious, and you know, any of our press releases, I've commented on it as a headline, really, that we're extremely conscious of the difficult times for people and families and so forth at the moment. And that's why we were very, very conscious, notwithstanding the fact that our own costs are increasing from the point of view of power and utilities and insurance and all the likes of that. We were very conscious of doing whatever we had to do to cut our cloth to make sure that the prices didn't go up from last year. And we presently have a loyalty offering which went on sale on Wednesday and has been very, very well supported. That's good until 12 o'clock today, actually. So people that were there last year would have received a loyalty code by email, and we've asked people, because we obviously want those people back and the cohort of their family and friends who couldn't make it last year, we've asked them to share that code with people. That's been a huge success so far. That's good until 12 o'clock today. And at 12 o'clock today, then we have our early bird offering going on sale on forestvet.ie or on Eventbrite, our ticketing partner. But basically, to answer your question, we're keeping the cost the same as last year. And, you know, there's a good offering. And when people see the bands, I think they will really see that they're going to get real bang for their buck, and it's going to be even a step up from last year's experience.
Philip, always enjoy talking with you. Keep up the good work, and we'll talk soon.
Great. Listen, thanks, Will. Talk to you soon.
Philip Marr, the promoter of Forestvet, and the clock is ticking down to those early bird tickets. Now 1 hour, 29 minutes and 8 seconds until they go on sale. We've had a lot of news so far. Time for some views. Will, as far as nightclubs being open until 6 in the morning, so much for the government conserving energy, says a text here. Yes, you heard how certain shops and indeed public buildings in many European cities, they go dark from 8 or 9 in the evening, all in the name of energy conservation and not using up those precious gas supplies. It does seem a bit strange, the timing of this. Catherine would like to highlight how she could not walk her kids to school this morning in the Hop Hill area of Tullamore. So bad was the flooding. It's amazing how much rain fell, and yet, if you look out the window in most parts of the Midlands, it's a beautiful, sunny, clear day. Will, can you ask the Minister, and unfortunately not, she's no longer with us, Minister for Justice Helen McEntee earlier, why many people are coming into the country without vetting or screening, and how much information are the Gardaí given about their backgrounds and criminal histories? And the final message, we had that dilemma earlier, the lady whose marriage ended because her husband had an affair. They kept the affair quiet from their kids. Now she has been framed and she's wondering whether to spill the beans on him. The overwhelming consensus was, why would you protect him? Absolutely not. Anyway, on to another dilemma. And again, it will depend on your perspective and how pressed you are for cash and indeed how pressed you are for supplies for your business. In this case, a Wexford company has imported fertilizer from Russia. Now, the company is Nitrofert. Its managing director, Eamon Gallivan, told the Irish Independent this week the company is buying the shipments that were originally produced in Russia, and they are buying it through an intermediary. And he was keen to point out that there is a quota. 1.5 million tonnes of fertiliser can be bought by the EU from Russia, that it is perfectly legal what he has done. The question is whether it's ethical. And again, to each their own on this one. Please tell me what your view is. But Francie Gorman is the IFA South Leinster Regional Chairman. Does the IFA have a position on this, Francie? Good morning.
Well, we do, Will. You know, firstly, I mean, there's no doubt that the invasion of the Ukraine, we've all seen the devastation and suffering on the TVs night after night. It's been, you know, a horrific time for the people in the Ukraine. And we fully supported all along any sanctions that were put in place by the European Union, by our government. And we'd support in any way, any supports that are given to the Ukraine to help them fight the war, whether it's through supplies or through finance. And, you know, the issue of, as you say, fertiliser, it's a kind of a moral dilemma. And, you know, the moral high ground oftentimes can be a place maybe you don't want to be either. But I suppose, to be fair, we wouldn't be calling out to our, we wouldn't be calling out to support the ban support for a ban of Russian fertiliser coming into Europe, because it has never been sanctioned in the first place. And it's seen as an absolute, essential ingredient for farmers to be able to produce food across Europe. And I suppose the bigger picture is, it's not about bringing in fertilizer, but it's about a failed European policy on energy, on fertilizer, dependent totally, almost totally, Germany on the importation of Russian gas. We depend greatly on the importation of Russian gas and fertilizer to make our fertilizer in Europe and to use fertilizer on our farms. So I think the bigger picture here is, it's a failed European policy on energy first. But just going back to the fertilizer issue, it's not sanctioned by the European Union. There's a quota put in place. And even if we were to say in the morning that we weren't going to take fertilizer directly from Russia, there's a fair chance, given that the bulk of our fertilizer in Europe is produced using European gas, that you're still just one step away from, you're essentially using Russian source fertilizer indirectly, because gas makes up the biggest bulk of the ingredient in making fertilizer. So I think that's the bigger picture.
Can I just get a little bit more background on the market, though? Because people will ultimately hold their politicians and policymakers to account whenever elections happen, and judgment will be cast on the wisdom of the policies that you've mentioned. But would there be other markets from which we could buy our fertilizer, and given the distance, what might be the cost difference?
Well, just to give you a figure, I looked through figures on my own farm about 3 weeks ago when I was putting stuff together for the accountant. I sourced fertilizer that year at €310 a ton, and last year I changed to protected urea. That was €1,200 a ton for a slightly different fertilizer. So the war in the Ukraine has definitely driven the price of fertilizer up in a huge way, mainly on the back of the concern about reduced supplies. There was a lot less fertilizer used in Irish farms last year because of the cost of it. And to be fair, if you have fertility levels good in your farm and you maintain them, you'll probably get away in 1 year, particularly if you have growth at the right times, which we had last year, in using less fertilizer. But there is a big risk that when we get into next year, with the cost of it, farmers will be able to purchase less of it. And if you had an unfavourable grass growing year, you could end up in a situation, if we weren't spreading the same amount of fertiliser that we normally do, that you'd have lost less fodder stocks for our livestock. And that's where it's at. It's an uncomfortable, reality. But practically, at the moment, because of the policies that they put in place in Europe, we are dependent on Russian oil, Russian gas, Russian fertiliser. And that's why, they put in place an agreement earlier on in the year to allow Ukrainian grain to come out. But on foot of that, the sanctions against Russian fertilizer and Russian gas, they weren't put in the sanction list. And it's an effort to try and keep, I suppose, the global supply of world food, to keep it moving. And we won't starve in Ireland, we won't starve in mainland Europe, but if we end up in a situation where the countries that are best able to produce food in the world, do it most efficiently, don't produce it, people in other parts of the world will not have the same level of access to food, and they won't be able, they don't have the income to be able to purchase it like we do. So they will be left hanging in that situation. So it's an essential ingredient when it comes to producing food, and that's why it's not on the sanction list.
Francie Gorman, we must leave it there. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Will.
Mr. Gorman is the IFA's South Leinster Regional Chairman. Now, if you are an objector, if you think the company did the wrong thing, and they have clarified, by the way, they did not buy directly from a Russian firm, it was an intermediary, but tell us why you're not being idealistic, because Mr. Gorman has made perfectly clear that the best producers in the world, and Ireland is among the most fertile countries, as food producers, they rely on fertilizer, and Russia is one of the biggest suppliers. So can we afford to stick to our principles on that? 083 30 10 103 on text and on WhatsApp. Now, it's a beautiful morning as we look out the windows of the all-new Esker Arts Centre in Tullamore. Once upon a time, this was an electrical store, thriving electrical store, under Derry Kilroy and his team. But for recent years, it has been much, much more idle. It has, for many, been a pipe dream to have an art centre in Tullamore, one of the
only large provincial towns not to have such a facility. And it's been a long journey with many twists and many turns. But through determination and perseverance, those responsible have got here. And what is the vision now? What is the promise? What will it deliver? Let's explore all of that in just a moment. It's time for a familiar voice. If you wake up on Sunday mornings, you will recognise these dulcet tones. Des Doyle, good morning.
And good morning to you. It's pleasant to be here. And I usually have to get out of bed very early on a Sunday morning, like 7:30, when you're still fast asleep.
Yes, yes, but I have to do it the other 5 days of the week. You know, we both get Saturdays off. The reason you're here, though, is not to talk about Sunday brunch, but you're wearing a different hat. Which hat is that?
Chairman of the Tullamore Community Arts Centre, which has been going for 12, 13 years now, when we first started thinking about an arts centre here in town. And we have had ups and downs all over the place. We got into partnership with the County Council, which was the key thing. Pat Gallagher was the county manager at the time, and we sat down with him, and he agreed that we should go ahead and try and form an art centre. And so we set up a committee, a board, which consisted of county councillors and executives from the county council and four members of the general public, including myself. And it took off from there. And
what was the drive behind it? You know, what lit the spark that Tullamore needed an art centre?
We discovered that Tullamore was the only county capital town in Ireland that didn't have an art centre.
Wow.
Which has shocked us. But also, all the various organisations that were performing were doing so in, you know, halls, church halls, and all over the town, above pubs and what have you. They didn't have a centre where they could perform and have courses and so forth. So we decided that this is what the town needs. It's the kind of last link. You know, companies coming to town to build factories and so forth, they want their people, their managers and their staff to have as many facilities in a town as they possibly can. And we reckoned that the art centre was the last kind of remaining brick in our structure. So that's what prompted us.
So having brought together this group, local people, council officials, politicians and so on, you go through that whole machinery, which can be very slow moving, of getting the funding, design, tendering, all the rest. But we're here, and we're now sitting in what is a stunning, stunning building. And I know you've just been on a tour. What do you think?
Oh, it's fantastic. We've watched this. Well, I know I used to come in here and shop in Kilroy's time. And
probably so, the only time you've come in here without having to spend money.
No, we did spend money. We did. in those days. Yeah, this is the only time I haven't spent money. But it's a dream come true for us. And it will open very soon. Sean will tell you more about that. But it is a dream come true for ourselves. And a lot of hard graft we had. For instance, we had a location in Kilbride Plaza, and the design and everything. And all of a sudden, the whole budget ran away from us, and we decided then we had to pull back. In the meantime, the late Paddy Fenning had run this fundraising campaign, which brought in net 185,000 in the worst of times. So people were saying, what happened to our money? What have you done with our money? So it was rather embarrassing for ourselves and the whole board. But then we discovered that Kilroy's was here. And over a period of 2 days, we negotiated, and we bought it for 405,000, which maybe was a bit of money in those days. You know, that was maybe going back, 6 years?
Yeah,
but it wasn't. Nowadays, it's not.
Yeah, look at what has been secured. Look at how it has been developed. And I know there's still another fundraising hurdle to clear. We'll be hearing from the Lions Club about their brilliant, brilliant initiative in about an hour's time. But I want to bring in to the conversation Sean, because you're the man who is charged with trying to fulfil the dream and develop the vision. And you will be the director of this art centre. You are the director of this art centre. Describe what the completed project will look like.
Well, first of all, morning, Will, and thank you for having us on. As Dave pointed out, we have a magnificent building, smack bang in the heart of Tullamore. The building has two gallery spaces. They will be used to present visual art exhibitions. The building has a beautiful bespoke auditorium. There's 218 seats, fine big stage, all of the most up-to-date high-tech equipment. That'll be used to present theatre, music, film, dance, literary events. The building has many rooms which will be used for workshops and classes. So it will be a hub of artistic activity for the County of Offaly.
That's important, because we tend to think of the main theatre, the shows and the finished product, but having that room to practice, rehearse, bring in young people, train them from the ground up, that's another ingredient that has been lacking, because there hasn't been the space heretofore. So who's going to occupy it? Who's going to do all of this?
I suppose the building will be occupied by people from the town and the county who make art, whether that's music, dance, theatre, drama, visual art. You know, we want, in recent years, art centres as a conceptual thing have changed from the old model where you go in to see a show on a Thursday night, maybe see an exhibition. In recent years, there's been a real push to have art centres as I said, hubs of making, you know, these crucibles of creativity, where people, and it's not just young people, you know, young people, old people, middle-aged people, whatever age we are.
We're all young.
We're all young. You know, they'll have a chance to practice, to make, to present, to see. So the art centres work on a number of different levels that way. You know, to most people who don't make art or who don't do drama or dance, you know, they'll be looking forward to opportunities to see theatre and music and shows, whether that's by local groups or by touring professional groups. There's a whole range of levels. So we want it all to happen in here. We'll be welcoming everybody in.
I know, because we spoke earlier, you have come down from the Northwest and you had a very successful tenure there. And have you come down to the network of arts being ready and waiting, or are you reaching out now, wanting it to be accessible to all, trying to make those connections?
It's both, I think, but a project like this, you know, it's a new project, it's a new building in the county. All of the existing arts groups and practitioners in Tullamore and the wider area have been waiting for this. You know, this is a chance for them to present their work in a proper, dedicated arts theatre environment. You know, so I do see part of my job as joining up things, linking in, creating a network, building a community for the arts in Tullamore and Offaly.
So what timetable are you working towards?
Timetable is the tricky one. At the kind of latter stages of a building project like this, it's difficult to put an exact time frame on things. All we can say is soon, you know, as soon as possible. But in terms of actual dates, we still don't know. There's a few things to finish off. There's a few things to be installed. So soon is the best I can do at the moment, kind of. But I'd just like to take this opportunity to, I suppose, congratulate Des and all of the guys who've been doing this. You know, I know myself, I've been working in the arts for over 25 years. And I know that it's really hard to get projects like this off the ground. You're fighting a battle, a big battle, you know, and sometimes the arts can be, you know, not pushed aside, but, you know, not prioritised. And, you know, that's fair enough too in many contexts. But I think it's great that they've had the perseverance, the dedication and the commitment, and I suppose the talent and the ability to pull it off. So just like to take this opportunity to congratulate them, because this is a big day and a big time for that group of people who've been doing this for so long.
I should say, by the way, we couldn't have got here without the help of the County Council. The reality is there was a $2 million grant from the Department of the Arts sitting there for, I think, the last 15 years, and that would have gone if we hadn't pressed ahead. And so that $2 million is there. On top of that, of the County Council has chipped in $2.5 million, which is an enormous sum. And we then, as a board of Tullamore Community Arts Centre, we pledged that we would raise $500,000, and we're very, very far along the road for that, would you believe? And as part of that, we approached the Lions Club, and they're involved in fundraising with this concert that's coming up in the church.
Well, we're going to hear all about that in an hour's time, and it will be launched with what is perhaps a hair-brained or hair-chested or maybe even hairy-legged idea after the 12 o'clock news. Gentlemen, that's as much as we can say for now. Des Doyle and Sean Walsh, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
In just a few moments, would our Friday panel eat seaweed? Because it's one of the strange and unusual stories over the last 7 days. Also, why Brian Clunan, Anthony Kearns and yours truly have been hitting the gym this week to launch this fundraiser for Tullamore and for the Esker Arts Centre, the Tullamore Lions Club. Very proactive, always with projects around the area. This one of the more harebrained ideas for a launch, as maybe perhaps a hairy-chested idea or hairy-legged idea or hairy-behind idea. Who knows where the hairs shall be seen. Stop laughing. Anyway, if you're in the vicinity of High Street in Tullamore, I would wear, you know those glasses they say when the solar eclipse happens to protect your eyes? I'd wear some pretty, pretty sturdy gear. Anyway, let's say good morning to our Friday panel. Michelle DeForge is director of the Dunamase Arts Centre in Port Leash. How are you, Michelle?
Morning.
So how is the art scene in Port Leash?
Good. We're still, you know, working on building back up from kind of coming out of COVID and so on. But our audiences have been incredibly supportive, and we're looking forward to a bumper weekend. We've got a big show off-site in Port Arlington this weekend that we're really looking forward to. So that's coming together really well for the next two nights. So, yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting bringing audiences and artists back together again. We're very very optimistic about the future.
How do you feel about the new art centre in Tullamore? Presumably it's not a competitive atmosphere among art centres, more collaborative.
It's very collaborative, actually. I'm very glad to say that. We work really well together kind of across the sector. I think it's great for the town and the local community to have an art centre on their door. And inevitably, art centres, regional art centres, offer something slightly different from place to place. And people, while they support their local one, they'll look around and they'll see what else is on, and they'll travel to see the types of shows they want to see. So I'd be very... certainly wish them the very best of luck, and I know the challenge that's ahead to engage audiences as well. So it's no small feat, but they deserve all the support possible, and we look forward to getting to know Sean and his team over the months ahead.
Also on the panel today, Porrick Sullivan, a footballer, former Offaly footballer, and he also has mockmedia.ie to his list of interests. How are you, Porrick?
Very good, Will. How are you doing tomorrow?
I'm not too bad. Why aren't you here? Because you'd be a far, far more strapping individual to take on what we're about to take on in the next hour.
I kind of had to clip my thought to measure this morning. I'm as soon as this is over, I'm going to a wedding. So I didn't have the time. I'm time poor this morning, so I had to go via Zoom. But
I'm very grateful because, you know, planning permission to do anything on the day of a wedding is hard to obtain. So well done. Yeah, do you want to say hello to the happy couple?
Stephen and Emma, they're getting married in Crown Church at 1 o'clock. Stephen O'Connell and Emma Kerrigan. So hopefully they have a wonderful day. It's going to be great to be a part of it.
And despite the weather warning, touch wood, the sun is out, the sky is blue.
Well, I have the blinds down here. The sun's facing in my office. I live. I bought a house here in Redwood, out of Clara Road in Tullamore. So the sun is beaming down my window at the moment. So hopefully that can continue throughout the day for them and the weather warning doesn't come to pass.
Fingers crossed, and I hope you have a clear head tomorrow. Also making up the panel, Paddy Donnelly of Westmeath, IFA and EPRO of the Mullingar Show. How are you, Paddy? Paddy is silent. Hopefully we can get Paddy back in a few moments. Let's start with, well, we've actually discussed it already, and I would like to know the position of the panel on this. The fertiliser that was originally sourced in Russia, supplied to an Irish company based in Wexford through an intermediary. They didn't order directly from Russia. And we heard the IFA earlier suggest, well, there really isn't much alternative because the market is very tight. Policymakers have failed to create a diverse supply where we're not reliant on Vladimir Putin and such regimes. And therefore, if we are to have food security, this is one where we need to swallow our principles. What's your take on it, Michelle?
Yeah, listen, I'm not an expert in this field whatsoever, but it's very tough. Just because the legal sanctions aren't in place doesn't mean that there aren't ethical, you know, kind of ethical concerns with that. And I think it may be inevitable that legal sanctions will follow. So Ireland has always had a very good kind of international reputation for support of communities. You know, you can see from the support that's been given to refugees fleeing the conflict. Doesn't make sense then to turn around and economically support a regime like that. So it's a very difficult area. And like I said, I'm no expert in the agricultural, you know, requirements or demands that are there. And I can understand that pressure as well. Ireland, you know, the government don't want to get to a point where there's food shortages or anything, but you know, you would hope that surely another source could be found in this current situation.
Although the dilemma, if you follow it to its logical conclusion, and I'll get Pádraig your take on this, we source certainly as a continent a lot of gas from Russia even still, and would you have people go cold in the winter rather than burn Russian gas? If we apply the rule to fertilizer, surely we have to apply it to everything from Russia.
Well, I think you have to kind of peel it back a little bit and realize that these facilities are in place a long, long time. And going back to the fertilizer, I just read in the article there that pre-Ukraine-Russia war, 80% of the fertilizer that we take in comes from Russia. So it's not very easy to coordinate new supply chains, go to different countries, set up deals. It's a very intricate process. And I'd imagine that all of these things have to be factored in when, I know obviously morally then our hands are tied as well. But I think we're in a good place in the way we deal with things like this. We've opened our arms up wide to people in need. We've done more than our fair share to help everyone. But when it comes to feeding our own people, and let's think about this rationally, this is a vital component in putting food on our shelves. I don't think we can be put up there and condemned for having to go to these sources to acquire these things that are going to put food on our table, or indeed heat our homes, keep our people warm, keep our people safe. One side, obviously, you have to be aware of where it's coming from and where the money's going. But at the other side of the coin, then we're talking about the fundamentals of daily living here in terms of food and comfort. So I don't think we're doing anything massively wrong, in my opinion.
And of course, oil, gas, fertilizer is all weaponized in this conflict in much the same way the bullet or the mortar. It's just another tool in the arsenal of Vladimir Putin. Let's get a farmer's perspective. Paddy, I hope you can hear us. How do you feel on this?
Yes, Will, I can hear you. Well, I'd be speaking not on behalf of IFA, but as a farmer or that, And it's a very hard one to call. More than likely, that deal for the couple of shipments that have already come in has been done quite a long time ago, maybe before the war. Hopefully, we'll be able to get it in from elsewhere. I think that the merchant that was taking it in has said that he's not taking in any more. But at the same time, we've taken in between 50,000-70,000 refugees or that, and you know, they have to be fed. And when the farmer goes out next winter to milk his cows, if he hasn't got grass, he's got no milk. So we could be looking at starvation in one sense. So hopefully something will be resolved that we'll be able to get that fertilizer in elsewhere other than from Russia, if at all possible.
Well, here's another option on a lighter note. We heard this week of the benefits of seaweed. So seaweed, of course, widely available around our coast, and one of the companies who dry it out, who brand it up and who sell it, claim it is just as good as goji berries, blueberries, kale when it comes to supercharging your immune system. Now, Porrick, you're very fitness conscious because of your football commitments. Have you ever sampled seaweed, or would you?
No, I suppose not being from a coastal region, you don't get the same opportunities. I know they're probably widely available. I think this could be kind of one of those things that, you know, the next new fad. It used to be smoothies and whatever came next. There's always something, I suppose, that's being marketed as a superfood or the next thing to improve your health. I would certainly try it. I'm very open-minded in terms of anything got to do with health, recovery from sport, so on and so forth. So definitely would try it. And I'd be of the opinion, don't knock it until you try it and see, can it work for you? It could work for a certain percentage of people. Some people could make them sick at the thought of it. But I'd be very, very open-minded in that regard.
Well, supposedly, before the advent of the potato, Irish people relied on seaweed to a much greater extent than we do today. In parts of Asia, they throw in a stock cube. Okay, it's a little more finesse than that, but there are ways to make it flavoursome. Are you tempted, Michelle?
Yeah, I don't think it's any more unusual than spinach or kale. And given the kind of health benefits to it and the nutrients in it, I'm pretty sure I've had it on the side of a seafood dish before, and just it's been tasty. It's been just like salty spinach, kale, you know, green kind of vegetables. So I wouldn't be against it. I mean, it's to be understood, I suppose, it's not the slimy stuff you step over on the beach. It's been really well harvested and prepared and served up. And, you know, it's proving kind of popular in more gourmet dishes. So I think it'll trickle down and become more common. And certainly if it's got wide availability, I mean, we've just had a conversation about food shortages. If it's there in wide abundance, and it's highly nutritious, I think it'll make its way into more and more recipes and become more common.
Well, here's a thought. A good thing. And let me ask Paddy this question. What's the most unusual thing you've ever tasted?
That's put me on the spot, Will.
I can answer for me. Well, two spring to mind. There's a company in Carlow, and they bring in snails or escargot, and they spice them, or you can have them in garlic, and actually they're very, very tasty. And then, oh yes, our good friend Kieran Lambert, Lambert's Pest Control in Mullingar, brought down some dried insects, and they have spice on them, and actually they're pretty tasty and full of protein, apparently. Anyway, Paddy.
Well, I'd be up to trying anything once anyway to see what it's like. But going back to the seaweed there, seaweed seems to have been introduced into both animal and human food for the last number of years. So it is an ingredient that has come to the fore a lot in the last number of years or that, you know, for and health-wise in food for both animal and human consumption.
Well, I'm not sure if seaweed is on the menu, but our prize for caller of the week is €250 to spend at Max of Abbey Leaks. Whether you're looking for a quick burger, maybe those world-famous chicken wings, some gluten-free fish, and you still have another 20 minutes thereabouts to become caller of the week, share your thoughts with us. 0818 300 103 or text, even if it's just to say hello. Or WhatsApp 083 3010 103, powered by Lamb Brothers Toyota in Tullamore. On our Friday panel this morning, Paddy Donnelly, who is PRO of Westmeath, well, he's a member of Westmeath IFA, PRO of the Mullingar Show. Michelle DeForge is here. She's director of the Dunamase Arts Centre. And Porrick Sullivan is a footballer based in Road in County Offaly, indeed, former county footballer and owner of mockmedia.ie. What do we think of these new opening times for bars and nightclubs? And the Gardaí suggested this week they hadn't been consulted, particularly in the Dublin area, where nightclubs would have the option of staying open until 6 in the morning. Well, all nightclubs have that option, but in Dublin they're pretty likely to take it up. Are you tempted, Michelle?
It's an interesting one because it moves us towards a more European model of opening hours that are, you know, later. And I think one of the pros on it is that it's supposed to stagger people leaving so everyone doesn't leave at once, but it seems like a bit of a bungled timeline on it if they haven't consulted the people they need to consult, because the people picking up the pieces from any adverse effects are going to be the Gardaí and the, you know, local people who live near pubs and nightclubs. But if it was done well, I think it's a good move. But I think the resources and the actions have to be put in place the right way to allow for it to work and work well, and not, you know, be announced as a populist move and then fail because the supports aren't there to make sure it works well. So I'd like to see it happen, but I'd like to see it work well.
Porrick, would your feelings on it now be the same as when you were 21?
I'd probably invited more as a 21-year-old, but kind of thinking of more practical elements, as Michelle said, you're talking about having a lot more infrastructure in place. You'd have to have food services open, you'd have to have taxi services, even it would be an increased strain on paramedics, hospitals, A&Es, the Gardaí. They're all going to be factors, because there's going to be incidents, there's going to be accidents, there's going to be things happening. And probably more incidents happen and more accidents happen with a longer period in which to consume alcohol. I do agree that we probably do have to kind of lean towards the model in Europe, but I think there has to be very good communication from all the different services that's required to facilitate this move. I'd like to see probably a transition, maybe staggered, see how, do a trial period to 4 o'clock in the morning or whatever. But I just don't think you can go into the deep end not having kind of teased it out. I think it's a massive gap from 2:30 or 2 o'clock to 6 o'clock. So I do think we'd need to trial it out and see, tease out the problems.
Last word to you on this, Paddy. When is the last time you were in a nightclub?
Quite a few years. Quite a few years ago now. It's a pity that the guards haven't been involved, because if there's a bit of a schmozzle later on in the night or that, the guards are the first to be called to try to sort it out. I suppose we're leaning more and more towards Europe. And I suppose the other thing then is in Dublin, Cork and a few other big cities, if they're applying for a late night licence, they have to apply to the court, whereas in, as far as I'm aware with this, you apply for the licence once in the year, and it can be, you have it for the whole year rather than going to court on a number of occasions to get a licence for a late night session. So they're probably streamlining a little bit better than it was. But I think, sure, Will, you're only looking at a few cities that will be accommodating those people. It's, you know, people that's out and at work clock in there after, they're only leaving the nightclub at 4 or 6 o'clock in the morning, and they give 110% in their work, more than likely they won't be going. So it'll be interesting.
Although a few listeners have suggested we missed the point when we talked about it earlier with the minister, that for adults, if you're going for a night out in Temple Bar, you might look for a late club. But if you're a student living in Carlow, living in Athlone, or any student town, you could well be tempted to go out until 6 in the morning. And I'm sure there'll be more than enough nightclub operators willing to take the money.
Oh certainly they will. But how popular is it going to be? As some, was it Michelle that said there, maybe it would have been better to run it on a pilot scheme first in a number of cities to see how it was going to go, rather than just to bring it in across the country.
Now, some other headlines from the last week. I'll run through them very, very quickly. Diesel, now nearly 20 cent per litre, more expensive than petrol. And that trend seems set to continue, according to the AA. Also, a doubling of fines for a range of road traffic offences, including speeding and the non-wearing of seatbelts. We heard as well quite a lot about the British Conservative Party. It has been in the headlines for months, from one disaster to another, culminating in Rishi Sunak assuming the reins after Liz Truss bowed down, initially suggesting she was a fighter, not a quitter. 24 hours later, that position had changed. Do you have any views on whether Rishi Sunak makes much of a difference compared to Liz Truss, Pádraig?
Well, her reign was relatively short, as we all know, and it was pickled with controversy from day one when she got the seat. But I think there needs to be some level of stability, and that needs to be the priority. My only concern is, it's been broadly stated about Rishi's his vast wealth and his failure to recognise what the normal. The normal person, the normal individual, that their needs. How does he sit in their seat and put on their shoes in the morning? I think he's worth 740 million, something to that effect. But the positives, he's young. He's only 42 years old. He seems to be quite a competent man. So you'd be just hoping that he can bring stability and his reign can start off in a positive fashion.
All right, let's move on to the lighter side of the news. And there were a few stories about movies this week. And indeed, Midlands 103 conducting its own survey about popular movies. And I heard Cameron Clark from our news team rating some of the best, certainly Halloween movies that you might enjoy. Home Alone was voted the Midlands' favourite family movie. Mrs. Doubtfire coming second on the list. And since it's coming close to Halloween, Hocus Pocus was in third. Now, as an arts guru, Michelle, how do you rate those choices by the Midlands 103 listeners?
Yeah, they're popular titles for sure. And it's a funny one. When it comes to Christmas, it doesn't matter how many times we've seen a movie, it's part of the tradition to whether it's to cuddle up on the couch or go to the cinema and enjoy it on the big screen, which of course is always something I'd advocate, that there's nothing as good as seeing it on the big screen with that full surround sound. So for the last, well, I suppose not in recent years, but previous to recent years, we've enjoyed welcoming full houses in for Christmas films. And it's lovely and atmospheric to get together in a big crowd like that. So Home Alone, and the other one that's proved popular is It's a Wonderful Life for grown-ups, and it's proof in numbers. I mean, we've had full houses for matinee and evening screenings for some of these titles. So getting together like that is just fun. And all of us know every word of Home Alone. It's just synced in subconsciously or whatever, and we know the punchlines, but we still enjoy watching it together. So it's interesting to see that that's one of the favourite films, favourite family films.
Stephen Mullingar, No Basic Instinct, no 50 Shades. No, we said family movies. They're for making families. That's a different kettle of fish altogether. Your vote on best family movie, Paddy. I know your kids are grown up at this stage. What was popular when they were younger?
Well, I think the one that really sticks out is Home Alone. It seems to be very, very popular, no matter how often one looks at it. You're drawn back to it again, especially around Christmas or that, you know. That's one particular one that seems to be sticking out.
I can't believe Willy Wonka's not on the list, though. And I mean the original Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, not the Johnny Depp version.
Maybe it's just coming up to this time of the year. Maybe people are looking ahead at what the family traditions are, I suppose.
Anyway, there we have to leave it, I'm afraid, because we've run out of time. We have a massive fundraiser to launch here at the Esker Arts Centre in Tullamore. Just a final word to you, Michelle. You mentioned Dunamaze having some events coming up. Can you give us a rundown?
Yeah, absolutely. This weekend we're bringing one of the biggest shows we've ever brought to the Midlands. It's a show called Mom by Chuck Dowsa, and it's a massive scale, too big for our stage here in Portlaoise and Riverbank in Newbridge. So we're coming together and bringing it to Port Arlington Community Centre. And if you've been following us on socials, you'll have seen the video footage of them putting in the stage, the full professional sound and lights, and the seating rig. So we're transforming the community centre to bring this really big performance there. There's Cormac Begley leading live musicians and 12 dancers through a show that will blow the roof off. So tickets available for that tonight and tomorrow. Next month, we look forward to bringing the Leaves Literary Festival and with Claire Keegan, Booker nominated author Claire Keegan. And then after that, we've got Portlaoise Musical Society returning, which is so exciting after 2 years of not being able to perform, to bring the Irish premiere of Sunshine on Leith. So loads of amazing performances here for all ages and all the family. And we'll move into the Christmas zone as soon as we get past Halloween, all our Christmas elf planning.
Very good. Michelle, thanks for joining us. Pádraig Sullivan of mockmedia.ie. You've a lot of weddings coming up, and that's your speciality. I hope today goes well. And also Paddy Donnelly of Westmeath IFA.
Will, if I'd like to take this opportunity just to thank everybody that supported our table quiz last week. We had a fantastic night. And just again, thanks to everybody that turned out to support Mullingar Agriculture Show table quiz. Thank you.
Great stuff. That's our Friday panel. Next, well, let's just say we've been in training, three gents, to help a good cause. And you just thank your lucky stars. It's radio and not television. Our competition all this week, with thanks to Sean and his team at Max of Abileaks, €250 to spend. Whether you're looking for a world-famous chicken wing, world-famous no less, gluten-free fish, a quick burger, or, well, for £250, you can have a massive slap-up celebration meal, you and a whole bunch of friends. And don't forget as well, if you're not driving, and it is well worth the drive, but if you leave the car at home, they have a full bar and a cocktail list and live music every Friday. So, who is caller of the week? Sinead hasn't told me yet, but she will tell me in a few minutes. In the meantime, let's say good morning to John Lyons of Tullamore Lions Club. How are you?
Good morning, Will. I was fine up to 5 minutes ago.
Yes, well,
I sat in this chair.
I know you've been busy. You and the rest of the Lions have been assembling what is going to be a massive, massive concert in the Church of the Assumption in Tullamore next month. And you have assembled quite the choir. They're coming from where?
Dublin Welsh Male Voice Choir.
And also the Tullamore Stage School Ladies Choir. They're busy practising away.
At the moment, yeah. Regina McCarty has been very helpful to us in coming in as a guest on the evening, all to support our efforts to raise a few pounds for the new Community Arts Centre.
And I understand as well, apart from buying tickets to the concert, there's going to be a raffle. And you've managed to squirrel away €5,000 in prizes.
We've got great support for this. The first prize is €1,000 cash. Right before Christmas, what better prize?
Nice one.
colour tellies, weekends away, in hotels, golf outings, and loads of other prizes. We'll be listing them in a few weeks' time.
And where can you get tickets for these?
From any Lions Club member and selected outlets.
Now, if you're in Tullamore, if you're near the Esker Arts Centre, you have a chance to buy tickets right now. And on condition that you buy enough tickets, I will get out of the window and so will Anthony Kearns, who is terribly overdressed right now. Hello.
Good morning, Will. How are we?
From Guy Clothing, although it's going to be Guy Naked very soon.
So I believe.
Yes.
How do we get roped into these things, Will?
Somebody asked for an idea. Somebody came up with an idea. Your name was mentioned.
Of course.
And stupidly you said yes.
Correct. Well, look, it's all in the great need. It's the Lions Club supporting Tullamore Arts Centre, Esker Arts Centre, raising money for this massive choir on 27 November. So look, you know, like yourself, we're always there to help out good causes. And as from the Lions Club, why we're doing it is our motto is we serve. And we do lots of things discreetly throughout the year for local families, organisations, people need it. And we do big things like this or the Hoosier Hospice where we spread the word and get the public support behind us. So this is a massive, massive opportunity to get some much needed money, as John has said, for Tullamore Community Arts Centre. The concert night is going to be fantastic. The raffle is going to be fantastic. The naked drawn is not going to be fantastic. But hey ho, let's see what we can do.
Have you ever been a life model before?
I've never been a model before, Will.
Come on, even socks, gloves.
No, come here. This body's not for modelling. But anyway, we'll do it.
Okay. And on that note, all I can say is we hope to see you, as few people as possible. But I suspect it'll draw a crowd trying to get us out of the window of the Esker Arts Centre. And the more tickets sold, the quicker we'll disappear. And in the meantime, if you want to support, you can buy the raffle tickets or you can buy tickets to the concert. 27th of November, Church of the Assumption. And tickets are only €20. They're available from any member of the Lions Club, from selected shops, or you can go to tullamorelionsclub.com. And again, all proceeds go to Tullamore Community Arts Centre, the Esker Arts Centre here in Tullamore. My thanks to Adam for engineering, to Niall back at bass, Sinead Hubble and Chloe Farrell for producing. And there's only one song I can leave you with today.